Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, back from Jamaica, gathering medicine, as we all are, from the wild and the culturally liberating everywhere. So Jamaica, the place, it's medicine, you know, one love. Deep, investigative, delving, looking at everything sketchy with a kind heart. There we go. It is the land of sussing out how we are being played, right? This is very important. Still maintaining a kind heart, but how we are being played. And we go, oh, that's so useful. And my Jamaican friend Claudette years ago, you know, taught me the word samphai man, which means scam man, con man, with a little bit of wizardry to it, dark wizardry. But it's so useful, because to say it is to dispel its power. And I asked her, as I left her wonderful home, okay, what's another word that is the counterbalance to samphai? And she goes, solid. That man is solid. And I go, that's great, right? So in the swirl, in this reactive swirl of now, I was quite rude to a number of people on Facebook. I was so rude, I almost unfriended myself, right? So it's a critique and liberating blessing. There we go. Polarity feeds the dementors. May we not be fooled into it, and as tricksters, as agents of nature's liberating genius, you know, we aspire to always leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. So we don't count on it, but just leaving room, it's part of our dynamic of the word forgive, meaning I loved it from conversation with Board Up a million years ago, just redefining the word forgive as to mean to give energy for change. Because what couldn't we forgive if we define it that way? There's a little bit of complex things. Skype with guest backstage. Let me continue speaking and hope that they figure it out. I think KPFA is Skyping our guest. Hello, Board Ops. There we go. No, she was going to call you. Now you're going to call her. There we go. All right. It's in the hands of Trickster. That's right. And also crucial, you know, part of our dedication, especially now in the swirling complexity and vituperative polarity, is quite alive. And again, deep delving, be jaunty, even though fully informed, as Wendell Berry continually encourages. And again, from Michael Gruber and the whole realm.
Call her on Skype. Excuse me, this is extremely live radio. Again, there we go.
Alrighty, so from Michael Gruber, to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. That's part of our dynamic. Okay, so many things in play, of course, the coronavirus, there we go. Somebody posted a cute poster saying, and wash your hands, this is from Taos, New Mexico, wash your hands like you've just picked chilies and you're about to change your contact lenses. And we go, that's good. But again, remembering, you know, calm, and also irony, someplace that people under pressure, like the Middle East, like in prison, like in Jamaica, can develop this wisdom of irony that the Trump, as was pointed out to Bernie Sanders last night, has adopted, wants to move Medicare for all for just this one virus, going, okay, everybody could get tested for free. There we go. There we have it. Okay, so we are awaiting guests, but let me do a very long and welcoming introduction as KPFA finds her on Skype. There, everybody's got everybody's information. We can do it. Ah, that's fantastic. Okay, so more than perfectly, there we go, team. I love this. So we were scheduled during the impeachment hearings, but Ayanna Young, about to introduce you, darling. Way back at the end of January, and so now here we are again. So we are hosting Ayanna Young at last, land steward, protector, animating stories of environmental and social justice, deep ecology, what I love the Italians call ecologia profunda, and land-based restoration through her podcast and radio show, For the Wild. Really great. For the Wild is a love song to disappearing wild places And I put in that they may reappear. Right, For the Wild spirals forth voices from the grassroots, featuring dedicated teammates at the forefront of environmental, artistic, scientific, political, and cultural shift. ForTheWild.world is an infinite resource. So welcome, Ayana.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. It is an honor, and just, it's so exciting to speak with you because you have been, you've been in my mind swirling around for years, just making me laugh and really pointing out the trickster in the universe. So thank you for having me.
I'm so glad, right? Because as we almost went on the air a month ago, and here we are at last, I am so impressed by, you know, you, your team, your influence, your reach, your dedication, your preparedness, your discipline. And just a little shout out to your great ally, Melanie Younger, because it was she who wrote wonderfully quite a while ago, at the end of last year, "I'm writing because it feels like there may be some synergy between For the Wild's mission, our founder Ayana Young's work, and your podcast radio show." And then you said, "For the Wild," or she said, "is a female-led, millennial-run, progressive media organization and nonprofit. Our work interweaves tangible land-based restoration, wilderness conservation, storytelling, education. Our work is a response to the destruction left in the wake of capitalist industry, amplifying voices from grassroots and featuring thought leaders at the forefront." Right? And in addition to your weekly show, facilitating restoration ecology projects like our 1 Million Redwoods Project, and it goes on and on and on. Anyway, all praise to your actualizing. I have your chart here, your astrological chart, just for the fun of it. Because it is very beautiful to cahoot with you now as Venus and Uranus. Venus just entered Taurus, the realm of participatory animism, right next to Uranus, trickster ingenuity. They are conjoined. It's very beautiful on this waxing moon. And which is all important to your exalted moon in Taurus, which we might get to as well. But let me toss it to you. So I was listening to some, and I especially loved your interview, your show with Mike Phillips on gray wolves, right? And I was thinking, wolves and mushrooms as leadership guides. We're in a crisis of human leadership. And I took copious notes on what he had to say, but can I toss Mike Phillips and Grey Wolves back to you right now?
Please, toss away.
Well, I just did.
You want me to take it away, Mike? I'll talk a little bit about that interview. Gosh, Mike Phillips, what a interesting man. You know, he's the executive director of, I think, the Turner Species Conservation Fund. I might be saying the name of his organization incorrectly, but it's Ted Turner, who some of us know. He used to be the biggest landowner in the United States. Now he's the second biggest landowner. So it's again kind of that trickster energy of why I wanted to interview him. But I figured it would be really interesting to interview somebody who was holding so much power with land conservation and land restoration projects in the United States. And what was so refreshing about Mike is he was really tender. He was really emotional. He knew so much about wolves and coyotes, and you could just tell that he had spent years upon years being with them, being in reverence to them, really. And what I also really appreciated about him is he was willing to call out, in his word, the old white man tribe. I was so blown away in our interview that he was somebody who held such scientific knowledge and then held this type of power with land projects, but was also willing to look at the old white man tribe, quote unquote, in the mirror, call that out, and really be honest about a lot of perspectives on conservation, because it's a strange world, the world of conservation. But yeah, what's happening to wolves, as what's happening to the majority of species in the Anthropocene, which is the last mass extinction, that's what we're living through today. 200 species a day are going extinct, and the wolf is in many ways really challenged right now by our human supremacist dominant way of living on the planet. And, you know, there's some silver lining with projects in Colorado, the spine of the continent, allowing wolves to be able to roam. You know, they roam so far, thousands of miles in their territories. And so, you know, there is some silver linings, but those silver linings take a lot of work, and they take a lot of dedication from us humans to support these projects, whether that's love, time, money. But yeah, it was a really interesting episode. I'm interested to hear what you thought and what you pulled out of that. Or, you know, I know you have a very loving and beautiful relationship with coyotes, so I'm sure
and wolves. That struck you. You know, it's an assignment that I've lived with a part wolf and a half coyote. Otherwise, they would have both had, you know, one-way tickets to the wild. But they were ambassadors, involuntarily ambassadors between worlds. So yeah, no, and I thought it was particularly pertinent to us now in our political pickle. I was very moved by Mike Phillips, who I guess was in the Montana Senate, right?
Right, he was in the Montana Senate, and his story of how he was trying to pass this bill that it seems like really reasonable to pass, which was just asking people to not run coyotes to death and then run them over with their vehicles or ATVs. I mean, that seems very reasonable. Just do not torture these creatures and kill them in this really inhumane way. And shockingly and not shockingly at the same time, the bill didn't pass. And Mike was so, I think, so tortured by this that he had said that he wasn't able to pray with them anymore. He really held a firm stance on his, I think, outrage that his co-workers would not be willing to pass a bill that seemed, I mean, honestly, like, why wouldn't we pass a bill like that? That's crazy to me. But that's the kind of world we're living in, where there is such a disconnection from our more than human kin, from the waters, from the land. And so, yeah, it really is an example of what we have to fight back against. And I think there's, and, you know, I use the word fight, and I think sometimes it's a fight and sometimes it's like what's happening in Unist'ot'en right now with the pipeline going through British Columbia, or attempting to go through, and the indigenous folks of that area saying, no, you know, we are resisting, we are fighting, we're not going to allow you to put this pipeline through our territories. So I think on some level there's a fight, but on the other, you know, there's so many ways of getting people involved. I think there also needs to be a welcoming and a reconnection, and showing that, yes, it's about fighting and it's about resisting, but it's also about loving, and it's also about reconnection, and reconnection feels good. Ultimately, if we allow ourselves to detach from consumer capitalism and the machine that we're grinding in every day, and we're able to slow down enough and say, hey, actually being with our more than human kin, being with the trees, being with the waters, being with our family, our friends, in a non-consumptive way is so much more fulfilling than just trying to buy things all the time. And then what does it actually take of the earth to create the things that we're constantly buying? And does that actually fulfill us? So yeah, I think the resistance is so important. And with For the Wild, we really believe in supporting front lines, grassroots activists who are willing to put their bodies, their lives, their freedoms on the line for the land, and honestly for all of us. But at the same time, we really support guests on the podcast who talk about that reconnection, who talk about that love, who talk about just kind of the gentler sides of being activated in this time. And I think both are incredibly important. So yeah, it's interesting. And Mike was definitely, he was a great guest. And there's been so many amazing guests since him. Like, I think about Bio Komolafe, who spoke about this kind of slowing down in urgent times, and the way that we respond to the crisis is part of the crisis. And then, you know, the last interview I'll talk about for now is Dr. Max Liberon, who is a anti-colonial feminist marine plastics scientist from Greenland. And that episode was fascinating because we are really, speaking about pickles, we are in a pickle with plastics. Oh my gosh. I mean,
yeah.
We just what have we done? And now we're kind of faced with all of this trash all around us that we can't necessarily do much about the plastics that are here. We can do something about turning off the tap, so to speak, of creating the plastics in the first place. But yeah, we got some big work ahead of us, but I'm really grateful for leaders and people who are just willing to stand up, be extremely clear, have a ton of integrity, and lead the charge for all of us who are, you know, listening to them and supporting them to say, okay, I believe in these people, and I'm going to be activated. I'm going to be engaged with these issues.
Yeah, well, the war on life, and what I was just to tease back to Mike, but to go forward into everything that you bring forward, and again, everyone should know that you can have access to this marvelous repertoire of dedicated archives from our guest at For the Wild, F-O-R. thewild.world. It's a plethora, and we want all of our news, especially now, right? And all of that. So but what I was sort of driving is we especially need the qualities of intelligence that we humans are killing, right? So wolves have among the best family values going, right? And among the most admirable of leadership qualities, which is play is at the top. And my friends who have lived with wolves on with the wolves acceptance, you know, say that every 30 minutes, wolves will play no matter what, even when they're being hunted, even when they hunt. Play is crucial. And I've seen this where wolves and with pups and the whole clan came to jam with my friends who were playing guitar by the Copper River in Alaska. And they came and howled and then did a jam and then went off. And we are kin. We would be nothing without them, right? These treaties. But the wolf model, you know, is playful ingenuity. The alpha wolf is the wolf that engages the playful ingenuity of the pack and has the lowest resting heartbeat. And I go, let's put that on the table as leadership. You know, leadership is the person who engages the playful ingenuity of the pack and is cool. It's very cool. And then coyotes, of course, so that's very Saturn. And coyotes, of course, are just mad, wild, smart geniuses that I have not tired of mentioning this thing for our skill now, because, you know, but when you were getting hooked up here, I was saying I was back from Jamaica, which is a part of whose intelligence is about, you know, how to not be played, right? And the news everywhere is very much like, how are we being played? What does this polarity serve? All these things, you know. But coyotes will watch, you know, trappers setting traps, you know, secretly, and follow them. And then as the humans move on, the coyotes dig up the traps and spring them. The hidden cameras have seen them putting a stick in the trap, right? And then for attitudinal flourish, pee all over them. And I think that's part of what we should be doing, right? There's traps abounding, yes. Right? And then just something that has been dear to me and I want to toss back to you too is that, so I lived with a part wolf and a half coyote, so I know these peoples in a way, even in their semi-domesticated, semi-wild state. Quite different, quite interesting. But wolves and coyotes are mating, and I think it's an evolutionary advantage. Because it's, and I say to all of us, like, our definition of community, wouldn't it be wonderful to contribute to and be supported by a wolf pack, in which everybody's got a job, because wolves are very like that, that encouraged everyone's mad Uranus coyote creativity. So, you know, they were called coy wolves, but a friend coined the term wolfote. So I go, wolfotes. I mean, isn't that kind of what you're weaving with your podcasts also, the supportive structure that allows everyone's unique contribution to spiral forth?
Oh, my goodness. That is so beautifully said, Carolyn. Yes, I aspire to that. To build community, whether that's online, in person, a mixture of the two, so that people do feel supported to bring their gifts forward, because everybody is needed in this movement. Every gift is needed. And we don't have to all do the same things. And that's the beauty of it, too, is that, you know, if whatever your talents are, it makes the work so much more beautiful when we can work together, when we can find those creative ways of hiding the traps and peeing on them, so to speak.
Digging up the traps, springing the traps and peeing on them.
Yeah, and you had mentioned something about being on the Copper River. Did I hear that right?
Oh, yeah. You did hear that right.
Oh, well, yes. Gosh. The Copper River Delta is such an incredible place, and I love that you brought that into this conversation. It's one of the projects we're actually working on right now with Dune Lankford of the EAC Preservation Council.
Those are my buddies. Okay, we're inextricably intertwined.
Oh, okay, good.
Dune and
Carol. Okay, we're in good company.
And David Grimes are doing like, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, Copper River. Let's bring everything into its, you know, by naming it, we're invoking it. So, yeah, so what are you doing with Dune Lankard and the Copper River Delta? And that's so dear to me and so many people. I'm so glad. Yes. Yeah. What?
Oh, me so too. What are you, me too. Yeah, well, so I had interviewed Dune a few years ago. It's an amazing episode called The Day That Water Died. And for those of you who don't know Dune Lankard, I honestly have chills just speaking of him right now, because talk about a wolf leader. Talk about just the leader of the pack. He is the epitome of that to me. And so I interviewed him. He is an incredible fisherman activist from Cordova, Alaska. And just for those of you, just to kind of consider where Cordova, Alaska is, imagine the Prince William Sound, which is where the Exxon Valdez oil spill happened 30 years ago. So here is Dune, commercial fisherman, indigenous man, fighting against the Exxon corporation follow through on what they said they would do to, quote, make things right. And of course, we know that when that kind of disaster and catastrophe hits, there's no way to really make it right. The herring have still not come back to the Prince William Sound. This is 30 years later, and the herring have not returned. There are major repercussions to that oil spill, and because there's so many issues that come up in the world, and we have social media and news at our fingertips at all time, it's like these things are almost forgotten about. It's almost like, oh yeah, the Exxon Valdez oil spill, oh, forgot about that because there was BP, there was this, there was that. It's like, it's almost challenging to keep all of the disasters in our head, which honestly probably isn't good for our health anyways. But anyways, back to Dune. So I had this interview with him, and it was such a, just a heart connecting interview. And part of Dune and I's deep connection is we are both madly in love with the temperate rainforest. And he says he's in the north and I'm in the south. I'm in the southern edge of Cascadia, which is the redwoods. He's in the northern edge, which is the Chugach National Forest, which is still temperate rainforest up there. And so we connected so deeply over our love of the forest. And at the end of the interview, he says, "You got to come raft the Copper River." And I was like, "What? Wait." I was like, "Oh, okay. You know, that sounds nice." And I just thought he was being kind. But a couple days later, he texted me and he goes, "You coming up?" And he sent me a picture. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this dude is for real." And so I said, "Well, you know, I was actually coming up to Alaska anyways, because I've been working on the Tongass National Forest campaign to keep roadless rural in place." And just a short little sentence on that. The Tongass National Forest is our largest national forest, 17 million acres. There is still old growth forest there. And just to give you perspective, we have 2-4% of all old growth left globally in the world. You get the point. 2-4% of all old growth left. And so to imagine that we are subsidizing in the millions of dollars as U.S. citizens to slaughter the last remaining old growth forest, it's insanity. It's absolutely crazy. So I was going up there to work with grassroots organizers to get the word out to keep roadless rural in place. There was just a public comment period that ended in December. There's two great episodes, both from Indigenous women elders, Kasa'age and Kushutaha Kolp. They're in the field episodes. I really recommend listening. You can hear the land through these women's voices. It's so powerful, and their rage and their love is just, it just bleeds right through the audio to your heart. It's beautiful. So I was going up there to the Tongass, and I went to, and then I'm like, "Yeah, sure, Dune, like, I'll come up and see you." And I rafted down the Copper with him, and it was just unbelievable to be in a place that is still so wild. The Delta is absolutely incredible. incredible, with the moose and the way that the rivers braid through the glacial silt is just indescribable. And to be there with Dune, who is of that land, who has protected that land, given his life for that land. I remember this moment that we went to this place that had a ton of grizzly bears, and we were catching some salmon, and he put his hand down in the paw print of a grizzly, and it was so, just what a moment. And so, of course, you know, no way around it. I fell in love with the Copper River Delta, and I think that we really do have to fall in love with places to fight for them, to stand for them. And so Dude and I are, and many others, are working to protect the Copper River Delta from being mined for coal. Because long story short, there's the Korean Alaska Development Corporation, who owns 11,000 acres of coal patents inside of this incredible delta system. And in order to remove that coal, they would have to do something like mountaintop removal in this very wild place, even surrounded by glaciers. I mean, it's just insane to imagine that happening. And so over the last 20 years, Dune has been putting so much energy to making this happen. And this is round seven, and Dune says it stops at round seven. We're going to make it happen this time. So for those of you who are interested to follow along. Sorry, what are you saying,
Kelly? No, because I haven't, this is really great, interweaving who brought what to this renaissance, right? Because I've hosted Dune many times, and the last time, when maybe it's time again, you know, but there had been some main movement in the Bering fields that it be, you know, kept, the coal be kept in the ground in perpetuity, some movement. I know he's been working with the Korean industrialist who has to pay homage to his stockholders and all, but and Dune's like, what about your legacy? There we go, and through many things, but anyway, we send woof because radio is magic, and we followed up with action. That's really great. Yeah, the, so I've also been down the Copper River with Dune and David Grimes and a host of wild and untamable women. And I loved also what Grimes said about the Copper River. I keep this forever. He said, it's a class 2 river, but with class 5 consequences, right? That's right. Mm-hmm. Because it's moving pretty fast and it's pretty gentle, but if you fall in, you will die, because it's glacial and cold. And yes, and Dune reaching into the river and pulling out a salmon and being kind to it, and then we ate it. And then at that same spot where the grizzlies are teaching their young how to fish, and Dune had something, there was going to be some horrible tourist development thing, which Dune, anyway, all praise to him, as well as his idea, which I think is something we just want to animate all over. You know, why not pay fishermen to not fish for a season while they prepare for their new roles as ocean stewards? Why not pay loggers to not log for a season while they read up and prepare for their new job as old growth forest stewards? Why not, you know, it's like, come on, creative team thinking, money, take care of people who used to log, who used to fish. You will be taken care of and your life will be more beautiful. Here, there you go. I think that's such an important part of it. And then I just want to go back to Mike Phillips on the Grey Wolves and the Coyotes, and I do find it, and your love, my love of For the Wild, and thank you, because I find the stories about our disappearing animal and plant allies, you know, as you could hear in my voice and also Mike Phillips' voice, like, there are many stories that are hard to take, but those are hard, and you're right in there. We got to know, but I think when he said, you know, you asked him about the error of human supremacy, right? Speciesism, and you know, the whatever it is, the something or scene, right? The entry of it, but which we want to move into the symbiocene, you know, symbiosis. And he said we are primarily still Pleistocene beings, you know, small bands of hunter gatherers. And that's when he said, it's the old white guy tribe that insists on killing, right? And killing and exterminating what is in the way. And he delineates, you know, the driving to, you know, with incredible stupid cruelty, the bison, driving them over cliffs and things, bring them to the edge of extinction, and then bringing in European cows, right? I was like, of course, God, they just, and then I'm going to toss it back to you in a second here, because then, you know, and this taming, imprisoning, suppressing of allies and wildness, I think it's tied into the conditioned mentor political fear of the wild, you know, and the falling for the danger of the compelling illusion of safety, like Biden, right? Going, no, no, oh, the other thing might be risky. And it's like, so the old white guy team has been, which is, you know, not necessarily all old white guys, but you get the gist of it at all. But it has been like, no, no, make it normal. Bring in European cows, make it look pastoral, get, you know, just steady. I mean, Biden is a good and horrific metaphor for that, going, I just want a reliable, oh no, that's that, in that way lies disaster, right? So so back to yourself, but what, why we kill these beings, right? And then and then I love that we share the Copper River and Dune Lankard, and part of that story, you know, the Exxon Valdez spill on Good Friday, like the earthquake in Alaska happened on Good Friday, and Dune and David Grimes were saying the animals died for our sins on Good Friday, and a quality, as they awoke as ardent protectors of the land that they loved by that horrific ongoing crisis, they were good wheel and deal, because they're like, okay, this is tragic, but we will take some of this Exxon Valdez money to protect the Copper Delta. We're you know, all right, this is terrible, but how can we protect as much life as possible? And that's really crucial. So how can people lend their efficacy to anything that you're doing? But I guess we're in the Tongass National Forest right now. How can people lend their efficacy to your dedicated efforts?
Goodness. Well, yeah, I say that in terms of work around the podcast or the Copper River or just this type of media and communication programs that help people hear this type of information and really hear it from the people that are on the ground, I think that's really important, that folks get to have a type of direct connection to people like Dune or Kasayage or Kashutaha. And so if people want to support us financially, which is always great, and even though in my heart I am hoping capitalism falls away quite soon, because we know that our consumerism and resource extraction are what is causing climate chaos, are what is pushing these species to extinction. And so I feel very obviously strongly about that. And at the same time, you know, we got to put food on our tables for the people who are just busting their butts doing the research and creating content for these stories. The team of For the Wild is absolutely incredible. I cannot believe I get to work with this community of powerhouses that are so damn caring. And so you can donate at forthewild.world. We also have a Patreon page. You can also, you know, chat with us. You can send us an email at connect@forthewild.world. We're on Instagram at For the Wild. We're on Facebook. So really just, well, and then I'll also mention, we didn't get to talk about this a lot, but the 1 Million Redwoods Project,
can you hold, honestly, hold that thought? Because I want to get, can you hold that thought? Because I want to give it time to unfurl. And I was so happy in our dance that I, we blew right by the half hour short break moment. All right, so we're going to take a very short break just to identify. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our more than perfect guest ally this hour is Ayanna Young, land steward, protector, animating stories of environmental and social justice with a great, great, useful repertoire for thewild.world. And we will be right back after our usual Taj Mahal after this very short break with Alana. Ayanna, thank you.
She shook the constellation and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chiny, 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 come blow my chiny home. Home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Taj Mahal for 23 years. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And another great news service, we are hosting Ayanna Young from ForTheWild.World, all written out, ForTheWild.World, a really useful realm of dedicated knowledge, because part of our trickster practice is, did you know? Because people never mind being asked, did you know, if we ask it in a non-snarky tone. So the more we know, the more effective we are as agents for what we love. So, yeah, and so here we are back with wonderful Ayanna Young. Right, you were right in the middle of a wonderful thing to say, and we took our break. So feel free, go anywhere you want.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, yeah, I was speaking to the 1 Million Redwoods Project, that is another land-based project that we're working on, because I realized that I loved the podcast, which we call the Anthology of the Anthropocene. Speaking to all these incredible visionaries, I felt really driven. I felt this stoking of the fire to do something tangible. And I think that in this time, so many of us are being called to work with our hands, to be with the earth more viscerally. Yeah. And so a few years ago, I was definitely a suburban urbanite. I had never camped until I was 25. So this was not something that I had trained for in that way, psychologically or physically prepared myself for. But I had about 6 years ago moved out to the woods, and then to this place where I'm living now, which we call Cougar Mountain, which is the site of this living library, this native species nursery that has the 1 Million Redwoods Project intertwined with it. And so I moved out here. It was this beautiful land that had really come back from about 100 years of logging, but had I can hardly have the words for how much I love this place, but you know, it was a forest, it had logging roads, and that was it. So I moved out here, no running water, no electricity. I had this very funny kind of naive moment where I said, what did I say? I said, oh gosh, not demons, but something like demons welcome here in my body. Like I was really ready to purge. And I was kind of influenced by Stephen Herod Buhner, who is amazing herbalist and earth poet. Yes. And so I was in this psychological space where I was trying to strip away my conditioning, my entitlement, my human supremacist mindset around everything, and especially what I felt like I needed in order to be a happy, fulfilled human. And so after a few years of doing that, and it was really rough, and I kind of still live like that, but there's like, now I have a mattress, and like I do have a sink and things like that. But
hot water is really great. Hot water is really great. Do you have hot water?
Water is great. Let me tell you, hot water, gosh, what a wonderful thing to have. It's really my favorite part of modernity.
It's the best part of the modern world civilization.
It's
the best.
Yes. It really, really is. but at this point, I went to this confluence of this creek and this river that I live by, and I was looking up at the crown of the trees, and I'm like, what should I do? Like, how? I don't know what to do for you. I love you, and I'm seeing your demise, and I'm just here humbly crying out to say, use me, like use me, use my body, use my mind, use my spirit, use my privileges, use anything that I have to protect you. And at that moment, and it was of course this beautiful moment, and the dappled sunlight was coming through the autumn leaves, and there was this voice, and maybe it wasn't necessarily like a human, it wasn't a human voice at all, but, and it wasn't really even in English. I guess it was more of an intuitive voice that was coming through from the trees. And they said, protect us and plant our children. Make sure, basically make sure that we continue on through the age of the Anthropocene. And so at that point, I just really went full in, you know, with restoration, reforestation. I studied restoration ecology at UVic. And I was, for the last, you know, what is this, 6 years now, been in research and development of how to do reforestation with integrity. Because just like everything else in this world at this point, there is a reforestation and restoration industrial complex. And that is not what I'm going for. I'm not going for monocropping. I'm not trying to plant trees of little genetic variation so that they can get cut down in 40 years, which is a lot of tree planting today. It's really about the biodiversity of the forest, because what I've learned just being in the forest for so many years now is that old growth, second growth, third growth, plantation forest, they are all quite different. But when I see a really healthy forest, it's because there is so much biodiversity there. And we've learned that through other ecosystems, and probably a lot of people listening have a sense of that. And so the project is, yes, focused on planting trees, but it's also really focused on the understory plants. It's focused on the fungi that grow within these forests. And we're also doing unconventional methods of collecting of species and growing them out in a way that isn't using plastic pots in the same way that conventional nurseries are, not using the same type of irrigation methods where you put water in a plastic pot and, you know, what do you know, a few hours or minutes later, the water evaporates. So it's not really efficient in that way. So I really tried to just go so deep into all of these different angles, because I don't think I can be perfect. I don't think any project can be perfect. But what I think we can do is, I think we can do less harm. And that's really a huge motive of mine, is how to have more integrity, how to do less harm, especially when we're trying to do good. Because it's a weird thing that we can have great intentions, but we can also create more suffering if we are not taking the time to slow down enough to really understand systems and work within communities who know better, who've been there longer. And so it's an incredible project. So in terms of people supporting us, if people want to get involved hands-on in that project, you can email us. If you are a lover of native species, please get a hold of us. Also, donations really help. Right now, we're building up the Living Library. For the past few weeks, it's been super incredible because I've been able to be out in the field taking cuttings, climbing 200 to 300 feet up into the redwoods and trimming cuttings from the tops. And we have thousands of different trees and understory plants growing out right now. And I just got to clip from a Pacific yew the other day. And the yew tree is like, it's this amazing, it's almost like a Yoda tree to me, the way that the boss grows on it. It feels very, it just feels like an old wizard tree. And so I got to spend some time with the Pacific yew yesterday. And it honestly, like what I like to say to people when they ask me about living in the forest or how the, you know, how living like this or how being with the forest affects me, how I really feel, Carolyn, is that I am nothing without the land. Anything right. that is good about me, anything that is redeeming about me as a human at this point in time is because of the forest. And so my dedication and my devotion to these plants, to these creatures, the microbes, to the bacteria, to the fungi, to the furry creatures and the winged ones, like they give me life, they give me purpose. And so as hard as the work is, I feel so grateful to be doing that work, because I really don't know, I don't know. I think I'd probably be a very devastated person without it. And honestly, I'm already melancholy a lot. You know, it's hard to take in this information all the time. And yeah. I am truly affected every day by it. And I really have to work to move through the information coming at us from all angles.
There's nothing more important for all of us, for you to make tangible alliances with what we love, you know. And that's so important and available. And Mercury right now has retrograded back into the last degree of Aquarius, which is how we gather, you know. And it's retrograde, remembering resilience. You know, its image right now is strange white flowers are blooming in the ruins of Babylon. And we go, yeah, you know, there they are. And we ally with that resilience, that ingenuity, you know, so important to be a voice for that as you are. And we feel all of it. And then I just got a message, you know, we're all connecting, right? So I don't know if you know Ron Kauk, wonderful. Hi there, denizen of Yosemite, a great, great nature guide and ally. And he says, Radio Magic, a true sister, we are connecting. I was just thinking about Dune, wondering how he might be, all about healing. Aho, she's a new school teacher for youth, teach and show the kids. And we go, right, because he's working with kids to transform rock climbing. He's one of the best rock climbers in the world, from a macho kind of rah, 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 you know, into an intimacy, into it from Mars, Hyper Yang Mars, into Venus leading, and so he's leading these kids back into gentle intimacy through the rocks and nature, and they bloom. They bloom. Mm-hmm. These incarcerated youth. They go right, and it's so essential that we ally with that which we love now to protect as much life as possible. And that's, you know, in this whole political realm, that's the underlying crucial thing. How shall we do that, the restoration, the planting, and the reforesting, and did you know? And part of the thing is nuance and complexity. The complexity, you know, may we be humbled by studying the incredible, intricate beauty of these complex systems that humans are like, galumph, galumph, galumph. You know, and nuance and complexity in the forest leads to nuance and complexity of thinking, right? And so as we tame things, our thinking gets stupider, right? And it's kind of part of the reality police. And so the more variety, the more nuance, the more we ally with the fecund fertility and resilience of the forest and the places we love and the rivers, you know. So I just strolled down to the Potomac River and go, I bring you greetings from the White River in Jamaica and from your mother, the Caribbean. And we're all, and they're like, thank you, hello. We tell stories back and forth to the land that we love that's so important. So yeah, nuance, mm-hmm. complexity. And it was one of Dune and David Grimes's friends, Chief Marie, of the Athabascans, when she was dying, and she was one of the last Athabascan speakers, and people were like, how maybe the language will die, and she said, no, the language comes from the earth. If you maintain your connection to the earth, the language will surface. It's like very moving. Yeah, all these things that are so moving. So it is dire. It's neck and neck. Well, that's why nature's resilient trickster, mm-hmm. and you allying with that, going right to ally with that which is wiser and stronger than ourselves, going, all right, trickster. But I think, see, our one of our tasks is to invite it in, going, trickster loves against all odds. And it's and every time we go, it's very against all. Oh, it's even more against all odds. All right, Trickster really loves this, because Trickster loves the discrepancy between how things are and how they should be, and that's where it's energy to experiment, try this, try that. Here we go around the thing. So, Stephen Herod Buhner, a great ally, a hoot of a guy, and with his new book on herbal remedies for viruses. There we go. There he's got his book ready to go. We've got to both interview him as soon as possible. Because his saying that, you know, he can walk around somebody's house and look at the weeds that are growing there and diagnose the illness of the person inside, because the plants are showing up to heal them. And he said, we mistake them sometimes for invasive species, I mean, or as an enemy rather than as an ally. He said the predominant plants showing up in the Pacific Northwest are specific for melancholy, depression, and alcoholism, right? They're like, we're just trying to heal you. No, we're trying to kill you with Roundup. No, we're just trying to heal you. So it is, you know, will we find the thing that heals us before we kill it, you know, this human thing here? And here we are in this, you know, cauldron, and viruses have always served as temple guardians, going, do not pass this boundary. Do have manners. Do not disrupt this. Mm-hmm. Do not eat bush meat of your kin, you know, or there will be repercussions of an unsentimental kind in which, you know, innocent people. So here we are. That's right. But it's like talking to everything, and you're so good at this. I wanted to bring you in to play. I don't know if you know your astrological chart really well, but it's humming. You beautiful cancer, agent of Big Mama, protection of life, remembering all kinship, incarnation of the moon. Where's the moon? Exalted in Taurus at the dark of the moon when people gather at 18 plus Taurus. That's my Jupiter. And this full moon that will be on March 9th, see, again, nature is so much wiser and huger and bigger. I think that's what gives us heart than us befoibled humans. It will be at 19 Virgo, trining your moon, going, you've been doing good work, Ayana, and now we're backing you up. Here you go, a surge of vitality and resources and releasing resistance to money and water just for the fun of it. There we go. And this full moon will be a super moon, meaning the moon is so close to the Earth, it will be very big when it rises, and Mercury stations to go forward on that moon. So what do we want to be a voice for? And hence our cahooting, thanks to your wonderful ally. And here we are. But that moon will be trining your moon. There we go. And I think, I'm just reaching for something here. I think it's good for all of us, because it's like there are necessary miracles. And the image for this full moon at 19 plus Virgo, according to Dane Rudyard, is here there is no longer any sense of competition, but an order and structured endeavor incarnating into actuality. There we go. We want coherence. This is about, cooperating in order and coherence, being available to humans who are dedicated to protecting as much life as possible, going, we'll back you up, your dedication. And that's a part of yourself, right?
Read my chart. What a the dream come true.
Oh, well, that's great. That's really great. And the sun right now conjoined Neptune, meaning the dream team is the winning ticket in every level. It's engaging. Dreams are the most practical thing going, our yearning for coherence. And the sun at 15 Pisces, which is the Grail legend, is exactly squaring your Saturn at the bottom of your chart, which is life is a grand adventure. Determination to see through one's ideals come hell or high water. That's you. That's you.
Oh my gosh.
with the Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth, little dwarf planet at 23 Sagittarius, conjoining your Uranus, ingenuity at 23 Sagittarius, exactly, your dedication, and let's bring in all the supernatural or natural intelligences. Eris, goddess of disruption, way out there in the Kuiper Belt, is stationing at 23 Aries, trining your Uranus and your Ceres. What would we like disrupted? And she's going to be there forever dancing with you and all of us in some form. And her image is, in what way disrupted? Her image is curtains blown inward in the shape of a cornucopia letting in fresh air. And so even from your, remote and beautiful yet intimate, remote to humans but intimate with nature place, and the podcasts and radios that we share in cahoots, spiraling out there into the invisible world to have their own effect. And your Uranus is Nelson Mandela's rising sign, which is the bluebird of happiness perched on the gate of a little cottage. And I love that because Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison, but he knew he was going to be happy. He knew there was a bluebird of happiness through the whole time, and that sustained him. And it took him a while, but he was happy. And in that sense, when you say, for all of us, how do we keep our spirits up in the face of so much? We go, fortunately, it's not just humans. And let me toss this back to you, too, because sometimes in my grumpier moods, and we want to compost everything into nutrient, but I go, humans, not really my favorite species, right? But we have to work with it. What is the good part? To be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time, said some smart British person. And I always like to go, and the highest cultural achievement of wolves and whale songs and just everybody, everybody. So I think the onstage act, the actual things that you're doing are so wonderful and powerful. And they do things, and then they become a story which travels, and then that story inspires other people to do what you're doing, which then becomes a story which travels. And this is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Caroline, for all of that.
No, absolutely. And we want to defuse the tension, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I love the story that travels, that inspires other people to have their story that travels. And I think about that a lot with the reforestation project, especially because here I am collecting these native plants and trying to create a type of Noah's Ark that can get through this crazy time that we're living through. And my dream is that other people in their way do the same thing. And whether that's planting native species in their backyard, whether that's planting it on the streets where they live, it doesn't really matter where they are, but it's the relationship that they build with the plants and the creatures around them. And so I think when we're able to inspire each other and look at each other and say, you have that spark too, let's spark it up together. Let's keep this going. Let's really build momentum off each other and know that we know how to do this. We actually know how to be earth stewards. It's in our blood, it's in our lineage, it's in our ancestry. We weren't always so disconnected. We couldn't be disconnected for our own survival. We had to be connected in order to live, in order to procreate. And so it's not that far back that all of us have this deep connection in our lineages, and to bring it back and to really claim it again and say, no, we're choosing to be humans in this way. And we're choosing to slow down, to build relationships, to build trust, to build consent, to build reciprocity. That reminds me of an interview I did with Dr. Kyle White, who said that to me. He said, you know, kind of making a stance, well, how long is it going to take for us to, you know, figure out this environmental disaster we're in? He's like, well, it's going to take as long as it takes for us to build trust, reciprocity, relationship, and I really believe that.
That's great. Those are all good. Mercury retrograde as we prepare to sally forth on this new tide. Anyway, well, all too soon, we are drawing to a close. But thank you so much. And this is clearly part one. I'm so delighted at, Melanie for cahooting us and the confluence of these little streams into these rivers of replenishment and our shared dedication. And, let us be allies forever. So our wonderful guest, Ayanna Young, again, her infinitely useful website and podcast archives are farthewild.world. And thanks always to our wonderful Lucretia and Board Ops, all at KPFA, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Also, you can support the Visionary Activist Show on Patreon, and we will reconvene next week at the same time. Thank you so much, Ayanna. Woof, woof.